Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. For those of you who are just tuning on board, and I realize at different times of the day, people do come across the channel, we're here to talk about the issues involving our health and well-being, the environment, the way medicine is practiced, the notion of preventative health care, what we can do before we get sick that can help prevent our illness. This program is focused a substantial amount of its energies on showing that there are non-toxic and natural remedies for so many conditions that we have not been made aware of. Recently, I completed a series called Toxic Teeth, a four-part series that, in a very scientific way, showed that there has been, for years, a debate on the safety and efficacy of the mercury fillings. There were 242 citations and footnotes. That entire report is now on my website, GaryNull.com. That's GaryNull.com. I try to take on one topic at a time and do a complete and thorough investigation. That particular report took over 2 years of research. None of these can be done overnight. It takes a lot of interviews and really analyzing and assessing each point, because you can have people who passionately believe that something is right, and then when you look at the actual facts, you see it doesn't reconcile with the reality, and that reality is ultimately what we have to focus on. And then when you go back to those people, and in this case, Dennis, and you suggest to them, would you please look at this material and see if after reviewing the material, you would still hold the same position you do. And to some individuals' credits, after examining the evidence at hand, they will come back and say, you know something, I didn't know this existed. I'd never read this, never heard this. But this does shed some new light. And in light of all this, I will start to modify my position. Just as other people, and generally the majority, will say, I don't care what evidence you give me, I'm not going to change my opinion. Then you find that it's not about the truth. It's not about what is right, but the overwhelming need for people to defend the merits of their ego and beliefs by being right. Holding on to anything that they will say will justify their position. Right now, I have no less than 12 investigations going on. I'll give you some insight into the ones that you'll be hearing about over the next 12 months. Genetic engineering. Electroconvulsive therapy. That report is complete. I just completed it early this morning. And I will be broadcasting that as a two-part investigative reporting series next week, first 2 days of next week. I have one on low-level radiation. That's almost complete. I have one on a new updated report on vaccines, going more not so much at the dangers of vaccines or lack of efficacy or science. That we have really nailed down in a nine-part series that I've already presented and continually update on my webpage. But this goes into an area I did not go into in the first report. The conflicts of interest and the special political connections between the manufacturers of vaccines, who sits on their board, and the influence they have with various legislators who are in oversight positions and who I believe should be held accountable for the compromises made to allow vaccines to be included in standard of care and mandatory requirements when there is absolutely no science to justify it. But there is always the back issue. What other motive could a person have to promote something like a compulsory vaccine? That is what I'm working on now, that will take more time because those facts don't readily roll out. It's getting people on the inside to talk. But that will be done in time. And I'm doing some other ones that I cannot divulge or discuss this time because they're far more sensitive. And I cannot afford to compromise those investigations. But those are some of the issues, so at least those will be added to the ones we've already done up to this point. Oh, and I will be doing an updated Prozac and an update Ritalin. And I have almost completed my part 5 of Pathologizing African Americans by Psychiatry. And that is on the way as well. So those are some of the special programs that I'll be doing as my research is completed. What I wanted to do in this section of our program today is to see what are the issues that are particularly important to you involving your commitments to health, and what have you done to evolve those into a self-actualizing program. I'm going to have our engineer, who I'm hopeful is standing by, to give out the number that you can call. Now, today, I cannot take calls from all over the United States. And what I'm doing is, each show, I'm trying to open up a venue for people to make calls in. Like, I just took hours of calls from KPFK in Los Angeles. I was on there for 6 hours live, and which I'm on every week, and PFW every afternoon. And I realize some people may want to hear these shows because they are not repeat shows. For instance, in just one day, yesterday I did almost 14 hours of original broadcasting with only 2 guests. All the rest was commentaries on different themes. I don't repeat those. So if you want to hear different programming at different times of the day, I will try today to get the information, at least for PFW, where you can go to your internet and tune in at 3 o'clock and hear that show. And we're working on having that set up for KPFK. As soon as we do, I'll let you know that, because that's a completely different program. I find that the audience in the Los Angeles area tend to be very introspective, creative, very concerned about social and environmental human rights issues. And so I gear a lot of the programs there towards that. Yet in some stations, like down in Tampa, New Orleans, Fort Lauderdale, I do strictly nutrition because the people have said that's all they want. And I didn't get any other opinions when I asked them to the contrary, when I gave them a menu. Here are things you want to hear about: the environment or women's health or men's health or exercise or cooking or alternative approach to disease or hidden agendas. And then you get 2,000 letters in and you see, gee, 99% of people want this, then I'm going to honor that. So let's go over to our engineer, and I believe we have Michael in studio today. And Michael, what would be the number of people who would like to come on the air and talk about the issues in their life with our audience?
Gary, that number would be 209-2900.
Oh, thank you. 209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. Please keep in mind that this is not for people in Washington or Los Angeles or Indiana or Vermont or Maine or all the other places this program is heard. Just the tri-state area. If you can hear me within the tri-state area, by all means, please call in. If you have an issue involving your well-being and you'd like to discuss it, express it, be happy to share this forum with you. The idea is we want something constructive that at the end of the program people can have learned. I don't do too many open show calls because most of my work is more scholarly and in-depth and much like a classroom on the air. There are so many regular talk-in, call-in shows, and sometimes they can be very good depending upon the quality of the call, or they can be very limited depending upon if the calls are so overly specific. So hopefully we'll get some calls that involve all of us that we can all benefit and appreciate and learn from. I realize also that right now we have not been able to get you a a number to call to get orders for the show. And that's because we don't have a tape duplicating service. We don't have anyone who can make copies of the programs and get them to you. As soon as we're able to do that, I will let you know. One other thing is, we have been, and possibly people don't always appreciate when they're calling, they're not the only one calling. I get upwards of 1,000 calls a day into my office. And for the last 3 years, I've had as many as 6 people hired full-time answering people's questions. And it's not something I can simply afford anymore. I've had to, like a lot of people, I'm not a corporation, big company and all that. I'm just a person. 99% of what I do is in community service and activist-orientated work. And so at the end of the week, when you have to pay all those people, and it's a humongous salary, and mainly just to direct people, so I can't do that. I've had to cut back tremendously. And so you just wouldn't be able to get through. And then when people make a call, and if someone doesn't call them right back, then they get angry, and as if they're the only person in the world calling. Trust me, if you looked how many hits we get on our webpage, it's up to 2 million in a month, calls per day. The good news is there is a number that you now can call if you have health questions. Not my office. I'll give you one that is set up to help people. All right? And it is 212-252-1942. And that's the Metropolitan Wellness Group. And they're, in fact, I just spoke yesterday with the gentleman. Boy, these people you don't appreciate that they exist because they're so rare. This is a physician medical doctor, board certified, who cut back his practice substantially, and he chose to work in emergency rooms, which is one of the most grueling, tough medical jobs there is. And he goes out and he sees people and homeless people and the poor, just one of those very unique and special, grateful to know him human beings. So I'm glad he's now over there at that wellness group. Glad to know they're good people who still care about the patients, not just about money in medicine. So anyhow, if you do have medical questions, please do not call my office. We're just not able at this time to afford a staff. Because remember, at the end of the week, when I'm laying out $800 to $1,000 a piece to these people to answer your questions, I don't get any reimbursement. No one says, hey, Gary, thanks for being a humanitarian. Let me cover the cost. Nothing. Month in, week in, week out. So I have to go write books. And thank God I've had some best-selling books to cover these expenses. But, you know, you can't count that every book's going to be a bestseller. You're going to have income flow. Then I got to divert that into making my documentaries and doing my investigations, none of my stuff is subsidized by anyone or anything. So I just can't do that anymore. So please don't call for medical questions or referrals to my office because we've had to cut way back. But you now can call this number, 212-252-1942, and they are able to help you. And if other groups pop up that can help people, I'll let you know. And anytime you, by the way, if any of you ever come across unique and special people in the healing profession, please let me know about them. I'd like to talk with him, like to meet with him. The other day, there's a physician from Greece that came up to see me, and we spent about 4 hours talking about the work he's doing in Greece and very innovative work. I like to know about that. I like to know who's doing what around the world. And my brother, who's done a lot of good work to help the people in Dominican Republic. In fact, he was responsible for getting them 2 entire cartons. When I say cartons, like containers of a ship, of necessary medications and an ambulance and a heart-lung machine, which they didn't have. Could you imagine the whole country doesn't even have a single heart-lung machine? My brother Steve was personally responsible for doing that. You never hear about him. For 12 years, he and I did all of our books together, but he is such a good person, so conscientious. And for the last 20 years, he's been one of the leading advocates for consumer rights on landlords and challenging them on apartments and small businesses being exploited, as they frequently are, and going out of business because they can't pay the rent. But we're going to go down to the Dominican Republic in about a month and a half, and he's going to join me when we go to Africa. And we're going to talk with people down there about what therapies they're incorporating. I'm going to stop off in Cuba in the way because the Cubans are doing more with natural herbs now in helping patients simply because there have been embargoes and they can't get medicines. So they've mastered the art of botanical medicine, things that can actually grow and use. And the Cuban population is one of the most highly educated populations in the world. In fact, it ranks right up in the top three as a percentage of the total population who have advanced educations. Granted, they live under horrendous conditions, and hopefully that will change for them. We have people who have double PhDs, MD PhDs, driving taxis just to make ends meet. But I want to bring back much of the information they have and share it with this audience. Things we can do that they've been doing, they've been forced to do, to help themselves with their own healing. And I understand they have had some remarkable results with AIDS. So I'm just finishing up my newest AIDS documentary. By the way, when that documentary is finished, I will let you know, and I'll be having a public showing of it. Roland Marconi, my editor, senior editor, is working on it every day. And every day we sit there and we go over. You know what the problem is? We have so much good material, and we're down to 5 hours from 100. And you keep thinking, well, let's take a sentence out here and a word out there. It's so important. So I'm. It's going to be a long film when it's finally down. It'll probably be about 2.5 hours. And we'll have to do it if I want to get on television. I'll have to do it as some 1 hour, maybe a 3-part series. But I will show it when it's finished. But it is better than all the other 5 documentaries on AIDS I've done up to this point. And clearly, one of the most important documents about AIDS. Hopefully, we'll have some people come with an open mind to see it. Because we have presented a forum for the 3,000 scientists, activists, dissidents who now ask for a reappraisal of AIDS. And the film was shot in 37 countries around the world. So it's, and in one thing we were editing yesterday, here's Gallo. And you ought to see how absolutely dismissive he was of Dr. Stefan Lanka and some of the other scientists who were at the conference to ask him a question. They'd ask a legitimate question, just legitimate question. He folded his arms across his chest and looked at him and said, I'm not going to answer this question. Just pushed the mic away. You see, you haven't heard that. You haven't seen that. I believe the world should see this to see how these dissidents have been treated and why they're so frustrated they don't have a forum to share and express their ideas. Well, there will be that forum, as limited as it may be. And good news, the Gulf War Syndrome, we're doing a new documentary, and we're presenting the old documentary again to every member of Congress. And we're moving forward to have a major march on Washington in the late fall when that is done to have an outpouring, hopefully, of support based upon the science that Gulf War Syndrome is a legitimate condition that deserves to be treated appropriately and recognized. So that gives you a little update on what's happening. Now let's go to your calls and your concerns. I'm Gary Null. Your turn. You're on the air. What's your name, please?
Hello, my name is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. I've been listening to you for quite some time, Gary, and I've begun to make some changes in my lifestyle and everything. I had a specific question because I've heard reports on mad cow disease and the eating of meat, and I've gotten cutting that out of my life. But I wondered about when I'm in a health food store, I see, you know, like ground turkey that is free-range turkey or beef that has been grain-fed beef. Is that safe to eat? Is that okay? And what are your thoughts about that stuff?
All right. You've raised actually 2 questions.
Right.
Let's address both.
Okay.
The first question would be, is it safer to eat range-fed beef than to be, you know, the regular commercially factory farm?
Right.
In the case of mad cow disease, clearly that would be a difference, providing that the entire life of the cow was lived on the range.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know is that a lot of cows start off for a period of time being range-fed. Then they're moved into stockyards because you have to speed up the fattening process. Or you may have a range out in Montana where there's a lot of ranges, a lot of cow farms. And those cow farms will have the individuals there being range, you know, in other words, having them being fattened up. So they'll use a combination of commercial feed, which can have diseased animal parts in it, rendered animal parts in it, and a combination of grass. Ideally, every cow should be raised solely upon grass, not on grains. Grains puts on more fat and holds water. Range-fed puts on more lean meat. Meat weighs more than fat, but fat accumulates twice as fast as lean muscle. So if you range-fed a cow, it would take approximately 16 months to get a cow up to about 1,000 to 1,200 pounds, depending upon the variety of cow. You want to get them much faster. So that's why you cannot really tell whether or not there has been an interspersing of grass feed and commercial feed. So there's no, unless you saw the whole lifespan of a cow, you wouldn't know if it was free from the contamination of the prions that may exist in the feeds, and if at the very least, if not prions, certainly the other ingredients that are also bad, like the grease trap, that in fact, I just was watching just this morning. I was watching in front of a health food store, right next is a fish store, and a guy pulls up in a rendering truck and runs a hose in and dips it into the grease trap, and out comes all that grease that's really rancid and filthy and dirty and toxic, and they're going to go, you know, they're going to boil that and mix it with other fats from restaurants, from pork and animals that are diseased, and then that's going to be put on, sprayed onto pet food to make it tastier and put into cattle feed. That's just one item, let alone the growth stimulating hormones and antibiotics and pesticides. So to answer your first question, there's no certainties. Are you clear on that?
Yes.
But now you ask a second question. Mm-hmm. And the second question was more of an implied one. Mm-hmm. Why eat meat in the beginning? What is it that you need from meat that you can't get from a vegetarian diet that would allow the animal not to be raised and eaten, which certainly doesn't benefit the animal? By the way, do you have any pets?
No.
Okay. Have you ever had pets?
Not dogs or cats. Well, actually, my daughter does have a guinea pig, so if that counts.
Okay, but would you think about barbecuing her guinea pig?
No.
Why not?
No.
It could be made into a hamburger. You could make it. You could.
That's true. You're right.
And as long as you kind of left the head on the side, you know, so she could, you and her eating the hamburger, I don't think she'd enjoy the hamburger. Would you?
No, you're
okay.
Right. No.
Well, I have pets that other people eat. And it's interesting because when I bring one of my friends to my farm and I can call out one name and that animal comes over and they kind of look saying, that was a neat trick. I say, you think it's a trick? They say, well, yeah, I mean, how would one animal know its name? They're stupid animals. I said, you mean you feel okay about eating them because they're stupid? Would you feel okay about seeing a human hurt or denied their rights because they're stupid? Would you take people who have a lower IQ than you as being insufficient for your intellectual exchange? Think of what can happen when we start extending exponentially the lack of compassion that we share. So I show them that every one of the animals could come based on not just the name, but the sense of love and joy they had, not just to be fed, but the love that they shared, because animals there to share love.
Mm-hmm.
And they just love being loved and love giving love. And they don't care how old you are, whether you got warts on your face, they love the fact that you're there for them, and that's very important. At the same time, I think this is very relevant, we have to, at some point, ask ourselves, are we willing to go through a disconnecting from the... disconnecting from the need to continue to honor rituals that do not honor the spiritual connections of our life. And if people say, well, there's contradictions. The Bible says you can eat meat and sacrifice animals, but the Bible also says you can be a vegetarian.
Right.
And the Bible itself is a contradictory tome.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're given, it wasn't written by one person. It's written by hundreds of people over many, many years who had different political and emotional and intellectual concepts and agendas. And if we were to write a Bible today, who would write it? Would we believe anything from it? We can't even trust any book written today to be completely objective, because whatever is going to be written is always going to be offensive or at odds with someone else. So historically, people have relied upon authority for their final judgment rather than debating the issues themselves, and especially adaptive, supportive personalities. So one day you wake up and you think, why am I eating bacon and eggs? Why am I drinking a milkshake? Why am I having French fries? Why am I listening to some toxic radio? Why am I watching mind-numbing television? Why am I reading, you know, a stupid newspaper that has its own highly political point of view? I'm supporting this. And when you realize that you have a right to support only that which you want to stay connected to and share that energy, then you start to disconnect from everything in life that does not support what you're about. And then one day you wake up and you've disconnected from all the things that you no longer believe in or want to believe in or want to be associated with. And that gives you the freedom then to select the things you want to be connected to and you want to be a part of. And in that connection, disconnecting our energy by no longer honoring it and reconnecting our energy to what we want to be, then we can get out of a bad relationship, or we can move from a toxic job, or we can give up eating sugar. Because you ask yourself, what do you want to come from this? Do you want love to come from a relationship where the other person's not going to express it? No matter how much you want it, you can't force someone to love you. You can't force someone to respect you. They either do or they don't. And if they don't, then you have a right to say, okay, I'm moving on. But if you say, I'm just going to do everything I can to make you love me, I'm going to sacrifice everything I can, I'm going to be responsible for you, I'm going to bend over backwards for you, and maybe you'll see I'm a special person. And then one day, you realize that all you've done is put yourself into a torturous emotional knot. And you're sublimating like crazy. You're anxious ridden. You're drinking. You're taking drugs. You're working like a demon. All because what you wanted someone else to do and acknowledging you was never done. So you blame the person. It's not the other person's fault. You have to take responsibility that that's a choice. No one comes up and puts a gun to your head and says, you must stay in this bad relationship. Because we made the mistake of trusting our conditioning, that we have to prove something by how long we can stay in any situation, as if we stay in a bad situation long enough, somehow we've earned respect for toughing it out through tough times. No, that's foolish. If you see something's not working, it's not going to work, move on. Connect with what does work. You know the nice thing about this life? There's no shortages of positive solutions to every problem. So you shouldn't even be thinking about hamburgers. You should be thinking about, am I eating because of a ritual? Hamburgers is a ritual. Am I eating because I want to nourish my body? Then eat live foods to nourish your body. Am I in a relationship because I'm too insecure to find my own meaning and purpose in life? Am I trying to find it through someone else? Then take the time to be alone. Go through the pain and the fear and the terror of being alone so you come to grips with who you really are. Then find a relationship. Am I working at this job simply because it makes ends meet? If that's the only reason you're working at a job, wrong reason to be working at that job. You should be working at a job that honors your life. If you can't find that a job, then you're going to be angry with yourself for having a helplessness and an insecurity to have that job. Therefore, you're not going to be at peace when you go to work. Therefore, you're stressed when you go to work. And when you're stressed to go to work, that stress is causing a cascade of hormones that's damaging your immune system, leading you to disease. Hence, making a wrong selection about work is creating disease. A wrong selection about a relationship creates disease. A wrong selection about where you want to live creates disease. Eating the wrong food creates disease. My goodness, for all the things we supposedly want for ourselves that are healthy, the choices we make don't then follow a line of reasoning that we're going to commit ourselves to a healthier choice. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. And, so this, from this day forward, when you look at an animal, and by the way, I realize I'm just looking at my, for all of you around the country, I apologize, the tape did not pick up his question. We're not set up today technically to take the question on our tape. So I just want to repeat, his question was about, you know, the quality of meat and range-fed versus regular meat. Would it cause mad cow disease or be a susceptible mad cow disease? So that's where this answer is taken. So it's connected to other things because everything in life connects us to something else. If you take the time to look where you can go with every single point, it can lead you a lot of places you never thought you would go. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Hopefully, you'll now have a different perspective that you could choose to use or not. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to continue taking your calls. And what I'm going to do for the benefit of the audience who cannot hear all the calls, I will repeat the questions as we give an answer. And again, just in New York City today, please, our number is 209-2900. And we're going to take a short station ID break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Good afternoon. Once again, you are tuned to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. We still will be taking your calls at 209-2900 when we come back. We're taking this pause, this break, to get you to pledge to this radio station to support Natural Living with Gary Nall and WBAI, listener-sponsored radio, listener-sponsored commercial-free radio at 99.5 FM. Gary Nall will be with us throughout a couple of hours this afternoon before he has other duties, other responsibilities with our sister stations around the country. So do call us now. The opportunity is there for you to make this pledge of support to WBAI. And I'm joined in the control room by my partner here, Matthew Finch. And good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon.
And we have a new premium that we will be offering this afternoon, and Gary will be talking about that. We'll get to the personal computer show
a week from now.
Yeah, but we do have a new premium that Gary will be outlining for us this afternoon. But you can join us now at the regular subscription rate, the basic subscription rate, which is $50 at 212-209-2950, a regular subscription to WBAI, or a low-income subscription if you would like. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And as I said, we will get back to your phone calls.
In about 20 minutes, I will be announcing a brand new premium, and it's the best ever. And it's going to happen in about a minute and a half. I'm trying to fix a little audio connection. The feed on the ISDN line, for some reason, and if my engineer is listening, mm-hmm. Joe DeRosia, I cannot, I was looking and I'm not picking the audio feed up from BAI from the ISDN. I could hear you and your voice came over, but when you put someone up on the phone, it didn't. I'm not sure why. So if I can get...
I think we corrected that, and when we go back to the callers, I think everything will be just fine.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good, because as you know, I have to send this tape out mm-hmm. all over the country to dozens of stations. Okay, and well, then let me just tell everyone about this new premium.
Okay, and Gary, before you do, very quickly, yesterday we were hearing about the Joy of Juicing book, this new Joy of Juicing book put out by Gary Nall and Shelley Nall. We had a wonderful showing yesterday, and that book is still available for those of you who want to make the $75 pledge of support to the radio station. So if you were hearing about it yesterday, couldn't make the pledge, couldn't get to the phone, that is still available to you for those of you who can make the $75 pledge to 212-209-2950. In fact, we have three people calling in already. But, Gary, maybe you want to talk about this next one. This this next volume, I guess we'd call it. This thing is brand new to me, this new book that I guess you've just completed, right?
Yes. This is something I've been working on for so long. This is for all the people in this audience who read Who Are You Really? And got something from it. I'm a person who believes that every single step we take simply allows us the strength and the awareness and balance to consider the next step. And I say consider the next step because some people don't continue that journey in life. Last night, I had to teach. It was a long day yesterday. This is going into my third 24-hour day. And just because it happens occasionally, twice a year in particular, in this time and in the fall or January when we have these long drives and with all the stations around the country, not just BAI or the six-hour one with KPFK, but there are like 14 other stations that also need fundraising. And I respect that and I understand it. By the way, some stations around the country only have one employee. Actually, there's one out in Minnesota that has one single person. And they get their shows from the different syndicators, you know, like a Pacifica and NPR. And so it's almost, they're just playing tapes all the time. But then they have to raise some funds. And they think it's a big day to get $200 in a day. And there's reservations that are out there. So everybody has some different kind of needs, and you try to address them. And last night, I was answering a question in a class, and a woman said that she's learned so much, but she just hasn't had the courage to make the commitment, even though intellectually she knows she should. And so I took her on an hour and 20-minute journey with one answer to that, where we took a look at how it happens that we can think smarter than what we act. We're wiser than the choices we make. Everyone does this. She's not alone. But I said there is at least good news. I've created an answer I believe can help everyone who has that same question. Why do I keep repeating the same problems? Why don't I have the courage to just break through and do what I know I got to do? Why can't I say what I feel? Why do I stay in situations where I should be going on? Well, because of that step. The uncertainty of what's going to happen when you take the next step in life. You don't know if you're going to come down shaky or solid. At least where you're at, no matter what pain or problems you're having, you're at least somewhat comfortable and familiar with what might happen. So your entire personality develops and solidifies around this. So it's like a person that's gone, a fear of heights, looks down, climbing down a ladder, and freezes. In that moment, they feel that their only hope is not to move. Well, for a period of time, they don't, and they won't. And you couldn't budge them off that ladder. But in time, the fear has so limited their capacity to hold on, they'll fall. So what they ultimately fear, they'll create. And that's the way it is in life. So for all the people who've had fears and insecurities and uncertainties and pain that you have allowed to affect your thoughts, there's a solution. It's brand new. And it is powerful. I mean, this is a deep water swimming book. And it is the best book I've ever written. It is a sequel to Who Are You Really? It is called The Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right the Second Time Around. Because we sure as hell didn't get it right the first time. So this gives you the second time. So it's called The Baby Boomer's Guide. If you just say Baby Boomer's Guide, that's good enough. The full title is The Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right the Second Time Around. And in this book, I took every single issue that was raised in over 5 years, actually 10 years, excuse me, 10 years. I actually started keeping my diaries on this 10 years ago, of people who I was counseling and people in the classes. And that's over 10,000 people in the classes alone, probably another 10,000 people easily or more in the counseling, and I wrote all this down, and then I addressed it. And there's so many interconnections to these issues. For example, and it's just loaded with solutions. I raise the problem, I give the solutions. Raise the problems, give solutions. Now, it doesn't mean you have to keep my solutions, but at least get you started. For example, I talk about all the mistakes we basically make over and over again. The mistakes baby boomers may have made is the first chapter. And the first section is called Letting Others Control Your Life. Consider the following situation. Today, in what arguably the most successful civilization in the world, millions of our most prosperous citizens are experiencing a surprising deprivation. They never get to sleep late in the morning. Now, those who know me know that I personally wouldn't consider this a deprivation. I require little sleep and genuinely enjoy getting up with the birds and going to bed very late. But that's just me, and I understand that the vast majority of adults would consider getting up late once in a while to be one of life's delicious pleasures. Yet this is becoming an unobtainable privilege to a vast group of Americans, the middle class, baby boomers, the parents. They're just too busy doing important things. Of course, they've got to get up early every weekday morning to go to work and take the children to school and prepare breakfast and feed the dog or cats. But then they've got to get up early every weekend morning to go to organize activities with the kids. A morning of rest or idleness is simply not part of the successful American parent's calendar. Not nearly as often as it used to be anyway. Even our phraseology for this phenomena has changed. What used to be called sleeping late is now referred to as sleeping in, as if late, with this connotation of 10 or 11 o'clock or having missed the boat, is too blatantly graphic a word. Replacing late with in makes the phrase a little less descriptive and thus less awful. And why is sleeping late an obsolete pleasure for many? I'd say it's because they're letting others control their lives. And by others, I mean, and by the way, don't mean their children. Young children don't organize. Young children don't schedule. Young children do not enroll themselves in the myriad of organized sports teams and lessons and playgroups that families are busying themselves with today. Adults do, and other adults are the ones telling them that today's unprecedented level of organized busy work is good for the kids and is, in fact, what the good life is all about. Well, these other adults are parents' peers, as well as the so-called experts who contribute to the print and broadcast media and paint a picture of what's normal and of what is expected of the good parent today. From that picture, parents derive a series of messages about what they should be doing as part of the job of raising their children. Granted, no one has to listen to these messages or let them guide their life, but millions of parents do. And it's not just parents who let others control their lives. Think of all the consumers who receive an advertisement message about a product they didn't even know existed, and they have to run out and buy. Think about all the workers who are made to believe that working late every day is good when it's really at the expense of their personal lives. Is it necessary for them to survive working late? No. Think of all the people on a working, shopping, consuming treadmill who aren't getting any joy out of the process, but who have become so involved in it because someone expected it of them. Note this someone wasn't necessarily nefarious. It could have been their parents. My point is not that there is a conspiracy forcing people to behave in certain ways, but rather that people too often cede control of their lives to others. I think the baby boomer generation in particular is prone to this problem. They've been set up for it. How? Then I take you through a journey back through the 1950s and 60s of what was going on in the American home. And then I take you to where we are now. And then I ask you in a paragraph here, or actually a chapter, to think back to the important decisions you've made. Were they yours or were they someone else's? Did you simply honor someone else's choices? And if you did, how would you know you did? And what if you've never thought about it? You think that everything you do now is your choice? I'll bet it's not. But take this little test on page 8 and see whether or not you're actually living someone else's life. And are you living according to your own beliefs? That's the next chapter. Take a moment to review your beliefs and see whether or not you are living accordingly. Then ask yourself if your beliefs honor you. And also, who controls our country? I take you from the minor, yourself, to the major. Who interprets your reality? Are your limitations and constraints based upon false perceptions? I have so many people who tell me that they can't do something because they don't have, what don't they have? Why couldn't they have got it? Why didn't they want to get it? Because at some point they were told that's for someone else to do. In what areas have you ceded control of your life to others and you don't even realize how much of your life you've given away? So I take you on hundreds of little trails here, showing you where they can all lead. And there's a person who I will not mention. He's well known to everyone on this radio station. He's a hero to a lot of you. He's a friend of mine. And last Saturday, I set a copy of the book at the desk of his building for him. And he came over to my office, and I work on Saturdays and Sundays because it's quiet, and I can sit at my desk and write and read. No phones. No one else is there. And he comes up the steps, and he comes in the office, and he looks at me and says, Gary. I said, yeah. He said, damn, man. He said, couldn't sleep last night. I said, why not? He said, this buzzed around in my head all night long. I said, what buzzed around in your head? And he held up my book, The Baby Boomer's Guide. He said, this thing really disturbed me. I said, really? Why? And then he sat down and we spent the better part of 4 hours talking about what disturbed him. And what disturbed him was that there's so many truths that you just can't hide from. And he read the whole book. He couldn't put it down. 360 pages. And he said that every page it was like I was talking directly to him. And so we talked about it. And it wasn't, what bothered him was not what I had revealed, but how well he had disguised from himself what he could do to change that, to help himself be happier with his life. So at the end of that 4 hours, some really good things came from that. It touched one human being. It made a difference in their life. And that's the beginning. He was the first person that I gave a book to. And I don't know who else it's going to touch, but I know that the problems that I hear people talking about and their solutions, anger, fear, pain, bad relationships, problems with your kids, fear of getting older, opening a door one day, and it's a door that no one wants to look down, but we all have to. You're no longer 20, looking at your hormones bouncing in college and male friends, girlfriends, and career. You're no longer in your 30s working like crazy to support a family and prove yourself. You're going through the provings and wondering, did I make the right choice? You look at all the other options. You think, maybe I did, maybe I didn't, trying to adapt. You're tortured. You know, you're trying to keep yourself hip. You're still thinking, I'm young, I'm vital, I can do anything. And then one day you hit 40. And there's a knock on the door. And you go to it and you say, who's there? And you hear a voice saying, your future. Man, not now. Don't bother me now. Hey, look, you know, I just went through the last 20 years to get my education, going through the torture trying to figure out whether I want to be single or in a married or related or what. And I got done all that. I did the kid thing and I'm working hard on that. And I did the career thing and you realize how competitive and tough and there's no certainties anymore. And I've done that thing so what is it you want? Just want to show you the future. Well, I've worked to have a future. Yeah. What have you neglected? You've opened the door that gave you joy. Sex. That's a fun door. You opened the door that gave you children. That's an interesting door that can be fun. and torturous. You open the door of a relationship. It can be blissful or it can be bad. You open the door of your career knowing that, well, there was going to be a lot of changes and adjustments. You know, just like a hockey player going down the ice. 100 turns before you get the goal. Maybe did, maybe didn't. You did the athletic thing, but what didn't you do? And so, like it or not, the door starts to open. Now, you can run away from the door. You don't have to look at it. A lot of people don't. You can put your mind, you can say, hey, I'm gonna get myself so anesthetized. I may go through that door, but I'm not going to feel it. I'm not going to see it. I'm just going to, okay, do what you're going to do. But here it is. Here's the future. You're 40. You're 45, you're 50, you're 55, you're 60, you're 65. Here is the future for 125 million Americans. It's a slippery slope. It can be dark, lonely, and painful. Is that what you want? And look at the bottom of that slope. See a grave? You just slide right into it. You can go faster or slower, but the way you're living, it's about anywhere from 10 to 25 years from now. You think, what do you mean? 10 to 25 years. You mean I got 10 more Christmases and 10 more birthdays and that's it? Could be. Depending upon the level of stress you live under. Hey, to get where I've got, I had to go through stress. Nobody can get what you get and feel good about your standard of living without stress. Well, then you compromised. You see, compromise just... it makes a difference against you. But there's a choice. There's another door. It's over there. Want to go look at it? What's in that door? That door is not dark. It's not lonely. It's not filled with pain, balding, graying, impotency, lack of mental acuity, and... acceptance of an inevitable consequence? No. That's the door of starting over. What do you mean starting over? I mean you can start all over again. Do it right the second time around. What can I do different? First, you got to understand what it is that has to change. Have you neglected the power of silence? Who can be silent? You can be silent. What would happen if your cell phone didn't work? Would you feel good or bad about it? First, you'd feel it's an inconvenience. Then it'd be a relief. Think of how little time you've given just to being silent. Think of the incessant need to talk, 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 talk. Where's that brought you? When did you stop growing? When you stopped learning about yourself? How much new you is there versus how much of it from a long time ago have you simply adapted to and put it on repeat? Every day's repeat. Repeat the same patterns, repeat the same habits, and occasionally throw in a new movie or a play just for some variety to this otherwise very muted gray life. Have you ever been truly blissful and been able to sustain it? Is your body beautiful? Is your body blissful? Is your mind beautiful? Is it blissful? Or are you looking for the beauty and bliss outside of yourself? In a sunset? In a waterfall? You look at yourself now and you can't see that beauty or bliss. You could. It takes commitment. You've been angry and you sexualize your anger. What good has that done you? You've projected your anger upon others. What has it accomplished? There's another way of dealing with anger. Another way of dealing with stress. It's through this door over here. So you got a choice. One way or the other, you're going through there. You say, no, I'm not. I mean, I don't have to go through anyone's door. And you think, think not? Listen to this fable. There's a small child playing in a garden in the farm. was a farmer tending the field diligently, and suddenly the farmer looked up and was just in utter terror and went running, got on his horse, rode in some 20 miles, and hid in the in a store in the town. And about 5 minutes later, in through the gates of this garden came Death. And Death came over to the boy, and the boy's sitting there, and Death was shaking his head. And the boy says, "You look confused, Death. Why are you shaking your head?" And Death said, "Because I wasn't supposed to meet that man until tomorrow in a store where he's hiding in a closet in the town." The principle is that we can hide from our capacity to change. We can hide from our potential. We can hide from all the gifts we've been given, or we can embrace them. We can run in our relationships. Our secondary responsibilities are almost always where we hide. But sooner or later, no matter where we've hide, no matter how much of our life and our special gifts we have denied, there is a reckoning. And one day the reckoning is disease, or it's utter loneliness, or it's realizing we have spent so much of our life and we have created so little living legacy. Think of how many people have been born who left something material but never got around to evolving and developing that which was spiritual. Gandhi left nothing material. But so many people in the world know him, live by his principles, because he left something far more essential. Think of the people that would love to have done it over. They just didn't realize the tools were available to do it. So we don't remember those people. We'll look at their buildings or their homes and or their yachts or their whatever they created and think, But there's no sense of being connected to them. So the Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right the Second Time Around is your capacity to connect with your joy of life. You can change everything that doesn't work in your life. And from my point of view, honoring your life is the key to living. And that's something that's uniquely your own. That can't be done by committee or by a group or consensus. You're the one who has to determine your focus. And if you don't know how to focus on what's important, go to lesson 4 in one of the chapters. It's titled Determining Your Focus. And if you don't know how to honor your life, go to lesson 3 in one of the chapters and read Honoring Your Life. And then read How I Begin It. Does fear motivate your decisions? And how many decisions have you made out of fear? So when I tell you this is my most important work, my most important book, it is. It's a tool. Tools are only good if we want to use them. This is the tool I'm hoping people realize can make a difference in helping them with their life on all levels, of all problems. You'd be hard put to find a problem you have in your life right now that could not be resolved by reading and actualizing what's in this book. It's called The Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right Second Time Around. Fellas?